This is the DayZero update for March 29th, 2015. I'm Filippo DeNovo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
And if you were expecting to get the show on the 29th, you'll probably have noticed that the show isn't going out today.
Nope.
You'll be posted tomorrow. Of course, if you're listening to this now, it already has been. Because of the embargo on Axiom Verge. So we're going to be talking a bit about that and a whole lot of other stuff. But before we get to that, what have you been playing, Pat?
In addition to my usual Ridge Racers 2, I'm still on Final Fantasy Type-0 HD. I'm wrapping up the review of it as we speak. It's probably going to be one of my more verbose reviews. Not just in recent memory, but really since we switched to this particular review format here at Smashpad, I have a lot to say about this game. but we can go into that in a moment. How about you? What have you been playing?
Usual Defense Grid 2. It just got updated this week, so there's been a lot of fixes and a lot of new stuff to play around with. That's been good. Gotten back into Diablo 3 because that game is still awesome. What have I been playing? Oh yeah, Jamestown Plus. Been playing a bit more of that, and the game I can finally talk more about, Axiom Verge, which is amazing.
Yep.
Yeah, if you like Metroidvania games, this is probably one of the best. I mean, I'm at the point of thinking that if Nintendo never makes another 2D Metroid game, I'm totally okay with that because Tom Happ has kind of solved that.
Mm-hmm. That good.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's really that good.
How about you? Good.
Yeah. How about you, Brandon?
A lot of Far Cry 4 still. I gotta admit, that game's got a hell of a lot more content than I originally thought, because I still have not... I've still, like, only finished, like, one quarter of the game, and I've had it for a few days now.
Yeah.
I would just like to say this from the bottom of my heart. I really hate tigers. screw tigers. You know, I used to watch... They used to have those World Wildlife Fund commercials with the cute tigers. You know, they find the camera and then they show all the tigers getting skinned and having their teeth taken. I'm like, you know what? I don't feel so bad anymore. screw tigers. Death to all tigers.
Okay.
They are...
Oh my God.
They are fuzzy giants of pure evil that must be stopped at all costs. So,
PETA is going to boycott us so bad.
Yeah, well, I eat KFC, so screw them. But the other game I've been playing came out last week, Pillars of Eternity.
Yeah.
That is the kickstarted old school CRPG that if you're on Steam or GOG or whatever, it's shown up on a lot of people's lists, and it should, because it is a fantastic piece of work. If you're a fan of old school CRPGs like Baldur's Gate, Icewind Dale, Planescape Torment, Arcanum, any of that old stuff, this is definitely the game you want. This is literally an old school, like, Black Isle Studios type RPG, but it's done with a modern sensibility. It may very well be one of the most well-written RPGs I've ever played. It clings very closely to its old school roots, and yet the graphics are actually really gorgeous. Which is amazing because it works on very low end PCs.
Is this all pre-rendered stuff or?
Some of it is, some of it isn't. Most of it is. You'll have your additional things like waterfalls and stuff. It's amazing what they managed to pull off. The characters and all the monsters and stuff are really well detailed. If you get a chance, find it and get a hold of it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. How's the combat in TLE?
Well, what it does is You know how in a lot of those old ones, when you got into combat, it would just go full on real time?
Yeah.
Well, what happens is that when you get into combat, instead of what will happen is the game will automatically pause. Well, I say pause, but it'll automatically, it's sort of what it calls battle pause, and then it'll let you go into your roster and sort of organize the order of attack that you want to put and how you want them attack and everything, and then you unpause it and then it starts.
Okay, so, you know, kind of like the Dragon Age's tactical.
Yeah. Pretty much. Really, not much more I can say. It's just that good.
I was just saying when we were talking at the talking before the show, I love this trend on PC that we're seeing these days, where they're kind of dialing down the specs of some games, because and just seeing how it expands your potential player base exponentially.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that's really going to open up the PC as a platform. Obviously, you've still got your high-end stuff, but it doesn't seem to be as prevalent as it has been in years past, and it's starting to to give way to lower spec stuff that is just so well made that...
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Granted, you're still going to have the people who buy $1,000 graphics cards, but, you know...
Sure, but one of them, there's probably, 1,000 other people.
Yeah, pretty much.
Let me just put it this way. This Kickstarter was like the first game Kickstarter to hit like over $1 million-something. It definitely shows.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to pick that one up. Yeah. How about you, Teresa?
In the camp of cheap gamers, I'm also a patient gamer. I just picked up Skyrim and just started playing it this weekend.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know I'm a little behind, but hey, that's awesome though.
Yeah, you were mentioning that you're probably gonna maybe even put that off.
Yeah, I might. I have a because I'm playing it on PS3 right now, and the graphics are all right. They're all right.
Yeah.
Nothing stellar. It's gorgeous scenery. I want to see it look even more gorgeous. So I'm waiting for a little Alienware Alpha to make its way to my door.
Yeah, I think the PC version is pretty much the way to go for that game because of the just immense mod community that's around it, right? Even still.
Yeah.
Real quick, favorite Skyrim mods. Mine's the one that turns all the dragons into Thomas the Tank Engine.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that existed.
Well, there's that one, and there's also the one that turns them in. Oh, there's a couple. There's the other one turns dragons into Fluttershy from
My Little Ponies.
Yeah. Yep. And every time she blows, instead of going rawr, when they blow fire, she goes, yay. there's another one turns dragons into the late, great Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yeah, because why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that Macho Man's coming to get you.
Yeah, I'm personally fond of the Zoidberg mud crabs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Zoidberg mud crabs. There was that also one that had, the Space Core?
Yeah.
Portal 2?
Yeah.
Well, I think that might have been an official one.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, there's a lot of crazy and then not so crazy mods for the PC version, so definitely a lot to explore there once you get your hands on it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't really get into the mods at all because I was playing it on PS3, so But I'm not really too big on mods anyway, so
yeah. Well, when they add significant elements to the game, it's not so bad.
Yeah.
I like them.
Well, when they're like expansions in their own right, that's good stuff.
There's plenty of those, too.
Yeah. I don't know. How can you beat Thomas the Tank Engine? That's hysterical.
Yeah. There's plenty of weird crap like that.
Oh, you guys know the first one I'm going to be installing.
Yeah. So what we got coming up this week?
Are we sure this is spring?
Yeah, apparently there's stuff coming out, but...
You know, we just had Bloodborne, we just had Final Fantasy Type Zero, we just had Battlefield. This week we've got MLB 15 The Show, RBI, Axiom Verge.
Yeah.
You want to talk some more about Axiom Verge, or...
Yeah, like, you know,
the review
happy
should
if,
be live by the time people hear this podcast.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be happy to field any questions that you guys have about it.
Well, first things first, how's the animation?
It's very, very traditional 16-bit. It's a lot like Super Metroid.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good place to be starting from, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's got a lot of the things where you can actually shoot in 8 directions in this game, so that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
they thought that maybe, you know, someone might want to shoot downward at a
well,
at
not
alien.
They,
he, yeah.
Remember, this is a one man project.
Basically, yeah. So there's that. The soundtrack is pretty cool. It's got a lot of variety in it. It's got the nice traditional 16-bit style cutscenes.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that it doesn't have is it doesn't, like, overly burden you with menus, like the old games used to. Yeah, they're there, but he's set it up in such a way that you can basically get to whatever you want to very quickly.
That's good.
Oh, yeah, and the Justin Bailey code works.
Nice. Awesome. Classic.
Yeah. So there's that. Yeah, so... If you want baseball, you got that this week. If you want Metroidvania, you got that this week. And I highly recommend you pick any one of those up.
Or all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So we want to get to Type Zero.
Yeah. So the review won't be up yet by the time this podcast comes out. I'm probably about halfway through writing it. It'll probably go to Wednesday or Thursday. But... I really am surprised by how this game turned out. It seems to be a modern re-envisioning of elements from Final Fantasy VI and VIII in particular.
Hmm.
Obviously, the idea was to wipe the slate clean, go back to go back to a base level and start over without the what I describe in the review is the inevitable baggage that comes with having a franchise 14 games rich. But it is still Final Fantasy in its own right. It's obviously more of an action RPG. When playing it in the context of the Final Fantasy 15 demo that comes with it, it almost feels like a prototype of that, but so far it's far superior to 15. Yeah. Just because I mentioned all the problems I had with the demo last week. Well, not all of them, but what I had time to really go into.
Yeah.
But Final Fantasy Type Zero is fantastic. Class Zero, I was expecting to be one of the driest and most generic casts in the history of the series, and they've turned out to be surprisingly well thought out and maybe one of the best Final Fantasy casts in the last decade.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you feel like this is trying to get away from the Final Fantasy character types that have been, you know, prevalent in the series for the past few games?
No. And any ideas you might have about that will be completely shut down when you meet 9.
Okay.
All I can really say is that this is a character that has Tetsuya Nomura's fingerprints all over him.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of how he looks, how he carries himself.
Zippers.
Not really, but Class Zero kind of have their own uniforms, and it's sort of a blend of Final Fantasy VI, looking at the very real horrors of war. Blended with Final Fantasy VIII's concept of the whole school of child soldiers.
Okay.
And, you know, with modern Final Fantasy presentation. So, you know, make of that what you will. It's a fantastic game, like I said. I highly recommend anyone who likes Final Fantasy, likes and likes action RPGs in particular, to pick it up, because it's right there. I mean, that they nailed it. If I have any problems with it whatsoever, it's just that you never really forget that you're playing a handheld port. I think there are three kinds of handheld games, and it's kind of an archaic concept, but it's still around to a degree. And Final Fantasy Type Zero is one that I would classify as one of the born and breds, as I call them, where the entire concept of the game is built on the foundation of knowing that it's a handheld game. And so, you know, thankfully the difficulty offsets that a bit, and it is difficult even on the easiest setting. You'll find yourself getting curb stomped a couple times, having to rethink through certain parts of the game. But there are times when you feel like there should just be more to do in places. Or that things feel kind of deliberately stripped down.
Yeah.
And it's kind of unfortunate. But, you know, considering what went into this game, and what else is going on at Square Enix at the time, it's hard to nail it too hard for that. And in the end, I'm, like many people, just glad that we finally got it here in the West.
And it does set the groundwork for, you know, Type 1, which we know will not be a handheld game. So.
Yeah, we get the idea that Type 1 is coming. It's not confirmed, but the ending of Type Zero, the true ending, certainly seems to imply that.
Yeah.
And that's one thing. That's another thing I want to mention without saying too much. New Game Plus factors heavily into Final Fantasy Type Zero. Not just to the point that you have to go through it if you want to see everything. In a way, it's actually factored into the storyline.
Really?
Yes. And like I said, I don't want to give away too much, but it's really brilliantly executed and definitely one of the high points of Type Zero as a whole. And that's one of the things where I guess you could almost say that its handheldness plays in its favor. Because it's not such a long game that you're not going to want to revisit it to see everything.
Yeah.
Now, if it was like a full 60, 70 hour Final Fantasy experience, then it might seem a little more daunting to go back and play it through again once or twice or three times.
How long did
after you've already been through it once. You're not going to have that mountain to climb.
How long did your first playthrough take?
There's a lot of stuff in the game that's geared toward that.
Yeah.
But Hajime Tabata, the producer, and of course the guy who's or the director, the guy who's also working on Final Fantasy 15, had a little sit down with GameSpot recently, where he discussed the whole three pillars game design philosophy of graphic, story, and gameplay experience that has also been invoked in the past by Naoki Yoshida, who is of course, the guy over Final Fantasy XIV, and has been absolutely magnificent in his handling of what was almost an unfortunate outing for Square Enix. But Tabata, with the Final Fantasy XV demo, thinks that they focused on one of those pillars in particular, and I'm not sure which one it was, having been through the demo myself. There's not a whole lot of story going on. The graphics are good when they aren't causing the frame rate to chug horrifically.
Mm-hmm.
The gameplay experience, I said my piece on last week.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what he's talking about. Maybe it'll come to me if I make another trip or two through the demo, but I
can't bring yourself to do it.
Yeah. Not with time being the way it's been for me lately. He also talked about Type Zero. Not being like the lack of a PSP release over here was just the victim of unfortunate timing. The system was starting to wane a little too much when it would have been ready for a Western release, and they just didn't want to go through with that. But the idea of porting Type Zero to 8th generation consoles kind of came to them after Final Fantasy XV development, as we know it, really stepped into high gear. And thankfully, it was something that they were able to get knocked out fairly quickly, and we finally, finally do have that game in our own hands.
Cool. Sounds like you really enjoyed yourself with this one, though.
I did. It's not perfect, but, it is what it is, and for completion's sake, and just for the fact that it's a genuinely good game, I'm glad we finally have it.
Yeah. And we're going to have some more JRPGs to look forward to soon as well.
Yes, we are. Exceed getting their hands on the license for the PC version of East 6, the Ark of Nepishtim. That will be coming to the PC sometime this spring, and it's also being joined by action RPG Occubus Trip, which I reviewed late last year on the PS4 and absolutely loved. It's something I would have completely bet money against if I'd been asked if I thought Occubus Trip was ever going to get a PC port, because it just didn't seem like something that Acquire would have been interested in making, but here we are.
Yeah. And so the East franchise on PC is getting closer and closer to being completed.
Yeah. The PC's really been it's really been East's true home over the years. Its earliest years were definitely tied to NEC's consoles, the Turbo Duo in particular. But unlike a lot of franchises, Falcom didn't move it over to your Super NES, your Genesis, Saturn, when PlayStation, when the Turbo Duo kind of tapered off. Instead, they sort of geared toward the PC and built around that market and did really well for themselves with the East franchise, Legend of Heroes, of course. They kept on keeping on a sort of uncharacteristic platform for the genre. And I just recently figured out what it is I love about Nihon Falcom so much. And it's really the fact that they are basically like a version of Studio Alex that never fell into inactivity. And in some ways they are superior. As far as getting the East games released over here. We still need Ys 5 on the PC, or in general. That's the only one we're really missing. It would be nice to see a PC port of Ys 7, but... PC port of Ys 7, which was on PSP only. And then there's... We got Ys 4 originally on the Super NES, if I remember correctly, although that was a really unusual situation. You could say it wasn't the real Ys 4.
Yeah.
Were there parts missing? I remember
it was a completely different game.
Oh.
Yeah. There are two Ys 4s, and now there are three. Because they remade it recently on the PlayStation Vita, was released over here as Ys Memories of Salsetta. And that doesn't have a PC port. And then, of course, there's Ys 8 coming out for the PS4 here probably this year.
Yeah, which likely but will see a PC port.
Yeah. From what I'm hearing on the Exceed side of things... Falcom has kind of washed their hands of the PC at this point. They don't really have PC developers on their crew. Everyone is trained in the console tools. And that was a little bit of a problem because with The Legend of Heroes Trails in the Sky, getting a 2004 PC game optimized to run on modern systems. They didn't have any help from Japan on this. This was, we'll license it to you. You're on your own. Good luck. And Tom Lipschultz, I believe it was, over at Exceed, was talking on the message boards about it. And they have a programmer who could probably teach Falcom's people a few things. Yeah. So if Ys 7, Ys 8... find their way to PC, it will be because of Exceed, not because of Falcom, unless things change.
Yeah. Fortunately, porting a PS4 game to a PC is a lot easier than it would have been to get a PS3 game to go to a PC.
It's true. It's that standardization that we've been seeing so far this generation. It's going to make a lot of things really convenient.
Yeah.
But looking at Exceed's Facebook teaser for this announcement, I do have to say that not only does Get Naked This Easter imply that it'll be soon, it's also possibly the best promo line ever.
Awesome. You can take it completely out of context, and yep.
They left it there completely out of context. So, apart from the Ys part of it, but some people thought they were talking about a new Senran Kagura game, which wouldn't have been inaccurate. But if any of you without PlayStations wants a good action RPG to play, Akiba's Trip is good. Ys 6 is probably one of the better games in the series. Definitely look into those.
Yeah. We got a bit of PC news to follow on with that. Some DX12 benchmarks coming out. Any of you guys had a chance to look at these?
I have not.
I glanced at them. It looks like a very much needed update.
Yeah. Well, the benchmarks themselves are really only showing the API overhead.
Only I have a laptop, so
yeah. The API overheads, you know,
that's not a non-starter.
Yeah, they ran tests on a 980 GT, an R9 290X, and a couple of APUs. We're looking at close to an order of magnitude of efficiency increase. Now, that's not really going to, you know, translate real world to, you know, an order of magnitude of performance. But getting as much of the bloat out of the API as possible is definitely going to help everybody in the end. So, well, we'll see what happens when 3D Mark gets their, Future Mark rather, gets their full DirectX 12 benchmark ready. And we'll see how the tests shape up then. But, yeah. For those people who were thinking that DirectX 12 wasn't going to be a big deal, yeah, I think you might want to be eating crow pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then as newer hardware comes out, it'll be even more marked.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, for the Xbox One, this is actually going to be even more important because it... with the hardware level that you have on the Xbox One, every bit of efficiency that you can squeeze out of it is going to make a huge difference.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's one of those things that, you know, we talk about concerns that first and second wave games for platforms are still using a substantial percentage of those systems' hardware. This is how... hardware evolves over the course of a console generation.
Yeah.
Efficiency, developers just learning new ways to get the most out of the hardware, better tools coming out.
Yeah. But you usually don't have the platform holder like overhaul the API entirely,
yeah.
So, which is what's happening here. So
yeah.
It's good that it's happening because, DirectX was kind of old and busted and It needed an overhaul.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'm excited for that. We'll see how the real world performance translates, but so far it's looking like it's going to be something.
Yeah. So, on a sort of similar note regarding hardware evolving over the course of a generation and developers learning new ways to get more out of systems. Emmett Shear, founder of Twitch, the latest to kind of call out the console generational model as fundamentally flawed. He told the Guardian newspaper over in the UK that the problem is the 7-year upgrade life cycle doesn't work in the face of the 2-year upgrade cycles for every other hardware platform. It's so intrinsically built into how consoles get manufactured and made into the full business model that I'd be surprised to see another generation. Everyone spouts this shit until they actually figure out why there's a console market to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
It's that standardization that
yeah.
we want.
It's
yeah,
that you only have to shell it out, you know, for 3 systems every 7 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's just, I don't know. Every time I hear this stuff, it's like, well, you know, you can spout that off all you want, but that's not going to change all the people who are still going to buy consoles, regardless of whether it's, regardless of what you say.
Just so deeply rooted in the PC mentality of constant hardware evolution that there's just no comprehension of people who want to buy one piece of hardware and have all of that liquid capital, if you will, for the next several years, just go into software.
Yeah.
It's a completely different mentality, but, you know, obviously both have their merits and it's just surprising that, so many people still don't get that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he is the, the founder of Twitch. So, you know, he can say this kind of stuff, and it doesn't really matter to him because he'll have his platform on whatever console or PC happens to be, you know, the king of the hill at that time. So he really has nothing to lose in pushing for this.
Let's put it this way. There was a time in the game market where there were like 7 major consoles on the market.
Yeah, that went well.
Yeah. If that didn't kill the console business, you know, I have a few consoles still have a good future ahead of them. Yeah. They're just...
Well, it kind of reminds me of when Michael Pachter first decided he was going to be sort of the business and market analyst for the gaming industry.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in and just applied nothing but conventional business logic to the game industry. That he had some pretty strong growing pains when he first kind of took up that position. And, you know, for the first several years of that, we all thought he was a bozo because we all knew that the conventional logic just did not apply to gaming.
Nope.
And, you know, over the years, he's started to figure that out and learn what works, what doesn't in a game industry, in real game industry terms.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, you know, occasionally you'll still get somebody coming in kind of from the outside and not really understanding why things work the way they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to buy a console every 3 years.
No.
You know, it's...
I wouldn't want to buy 3 consoles every 2 years, which is pretty much what we would be doing.
Yeah, it would be an investment of
$1,000
$1,000 every 3 years. That's kind of pricey.
It's too much.
Yeah,
it's
gaming's too much. Already an expensive hobby as it is, so...
Yeah. And on top of mobile gaming and, you know, the constant upgrades to PCs as well, it really is. It's because I would guess that the majority of gamers probably, you know, do play on PC and do also play on their phones.
Yeah.
I'm the PC / console, you know, hybrid gamer. I don't do mobile at all. But that's for other reasons, not for the fact that I don't want to.
Yeah.
You know, because I couldn't see a phone to play a game on it, so that's a problem. Yeah.
That reminds me, I really need to start Final Fantasy Record Keeper.
Yeah, you picked that up finally?
I did finally pick that up this morning, actually.
Yeah.
It's installed on my phone, I just haven't done anything with it yet.
Yeah.
So. Have you played Terra Battle yet? You need to give Terra Battle a try.
It's on there, but I haven't done anything with it.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy Dimensions owns me. A little bit of surprising news. Also, kind of RPG-centric. A lot of the time you'll hear people complaining about developers, studios hanging on to the old hardware maybe longer than they should. That's not going to be the case for, of all studios, Nipponichi Software. They're committing as a matter of company policy, going all in on the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita, which is really surprising because this is one of those deeply rooted kind of sane budget RPG studios that, among a small handful of other studios, probably has the most to lose by abandoning the PS3 right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think they can see, you know, the PS4 is doing really well, and it behooves them to get on board with the PS4. PS3's life really is
the growing pains of the of past.
Yeah.
Systems in their first 2 years.
Yeah, PS3 really is on its way out anyway.
Yeah. Well, if it wasn't before, it is now. Because I mean, NIS was going to be one of those teams that really, you know, kept the lights on, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, there are still a couple of others in that. Loose Collective, Acquire, Idea Factory, Compile Heart. But I'm depending on how strongly those are even under the Nipponichi umbrella. I'm honestly not. I'm not too well read into the interactions between those studios, but they sure work together a lot. So, you know, we'll see what the implications are in the long run. But this is definitely kind of surprising because they're very invested in that huge installed base on the PS3. Mm-hmm. And it's a tremendous vote of confidence in the PS4. And I'm thrilled to see them mention the PlayStation Vita in this as well, especially after Square Enix's recent snub.
Yeah.
To see a major JRPG studio acknowledge it and remember that it exists and that it needs support.
Mm-hmm. I think there's plenty of life. There's plenty of life left in the Vita. I'm pretty sure of that.
Mm. And if you want to sample it at a discount price, get a PlayStation TV.
Yeah.
It's not a complete compatibility list, but there are a lot of Vita games that work on it, and just this huge, rich vault of legacy content that's available on the PlayStation Store. Mm-hmm. And, you know, $80 gets you in the door.
Yeah.
So, and especially if you do like JRPGs, it's probably the best system for that genre going right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, moving on to that, Brandon, there's something that's right up your alley.
Oh, yeah.
Possible reunion.
Could be. They've said that they're open to the idea. Question is, what is it they will be working on? I mean, we know they're working on Project Ukulele, and we know a little bit about that.
Well, they said they know what... Well, Playtonic has said that they know what Rare's working on. How they're privy to that information, I don't know. But it sounds like something that they want a piece of, and they're opening lines of communication to possibly make it happen.
I think you suggested it might be something Battletoads related.
It could be Battletoads. It could be a new IP altogether. You know, the thing with Rare in any of its incarnations is you never really know what they're going to be doing.
Yeah.
Right.
And
Rare is one of the game companies that's notoriously secret about its inner goings on.
Yeah. And they've got about a 50-50 rate of new IPs versus franchise releases.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really is flip a coin.
Yeah. It could be another Viva. It could be another Banjo-Kazooie. But I think Battletoads probably is a safe bet right now, especially with all the teasing that's been going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think this is something that that probably goes all the way to Phil Spencer. He seems to be really enthusiastic about the idea of it.
Yeah.
And now I just realized that there are going to be people again who are going to start calling GameStop asking for Battletoads, and this time they might actually have it.
Yeah. That's going to be fun.
That is the most beautiful finish to that entire trend that I could have possibly imagined.
Yeah.
Hey guys, do you have Battletoads? Why, yes, actually, we do.
That's great.
Yeah, I'm certainly looking forward to seeing whatever they end up doing, though.
Oh, yeah.
Just as long as they keep that friggin' cycle level out of it. Just add memories.
Up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down.
And in the show notes, I listed this as an unplanned Nintendo episode.
Yeah, we're
and about you're to get about into to that now. Why.
Yep.
Yeah.
So getting the ball rolling, Nintendo's been in the news a lot this week.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of started when Satoru Iwata shed some light on Nintendo's mobile plans. Nothing really that we didn't already know or at least consider. He definitely spoke his mind about the free-to-play model at, straight out calling it insincere, which it is.
Yeah.
free to start, maybe.
And it's insidious how
Languish. Yeah.
It's really insidious how much it's gotten its tentacles into the gaming business. I mean, you can turn on television and see, you know, a commercial for, you know, Clash of Clans or, you know, Age of War, all that stuff. And
Lindsay Lohan's game.
Actually, that's Kim Kardashian.
No, Lindsay Lohan has one too.
Oh, God.
Why?
Yeah. You know, I remember we used to have a free-to-play model that worked really well back in the 90s. It was called Shareware.
Yes.
Yeah. That was a long time ago, but it was. With Shareware, you know, it was a great idea. What we have now with this free-to-start, I can see one advantage and only one advantage. And that's you could try it out. You know, you could see if you like it. And then pay a little, and then if you lose interest, you know, $3 later, you didn't spend $20 on a game.
Yeah.
But I really think that it preys on the addictive nature of games, and it gets out of control entirely too quickly. I don't know. Maybe I'm alone on that, but...
Well, I'm repeating.
Yeah, somebody's... Oh, you're okay now.
Okay. But I was going to say, the one free-to-play game I've played that I think actually did it really well, I'm going to say it again, Terra Battle actually did it really well. Yeah. And the thing is, with Terra Battle, they pretty much give you the whole game for free. All of the monetization stuff is things like... Well, like, the one thing is, if you lose a battle, you have to wait, like, another 10, 15 minutes until you can play again.
Yeah.
Which, to be honest, is fine, because it's a iPhone game. That just means, you know, you can put it back in your pocket and go do whatever you were doing.
Yeah.
So they actually do the free-to-play model very well.
Yeah. So what do you think free to play Nintendo game looks like?
We've seen it on the 3DS with that baseball one that my kid is constantly badgering me to buy extra stuff for.
I wouldn't be surprised to see it resemble Final Fantasy Dimensions in its original form, which was episodic.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe something like either Mario Party or WarioWare related.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. But if you do it episodic, then I think that's the closest thing to the old shareware model.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would be okay with that.
Yeah.
And he also went on the record as... emphasizing that Nintendo wasn't cornered into supporting mobile. This is something that they're actively doing as part, just as a further part of their plan to support their existing businesses. And I think that's important for them to clear up. They're going to exploit this. They are not going to be exploited by it.
Yeah.
And so,
well, we know Nintendo has already announced that they are expanding into other markets. So,
yeah, I like it whenever the doom and gloomers get a middle finger.
Yeah,
it's it always just puts a smile on my face.
Yeah, yeah. Nintendo may have been losing money for the past few quarters, but you know they're nowhere near in danger of going bankrupt.
They still got a substantial amount of that Wii money that they made few years back.
Mm-hmm.
And they could have survived far more red ink than they saw these last couple years.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's the problem with the stock market, though. It's grow, or, you know, people say you're on your way out.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't
either think... grow, or you jump out the office window and die.
Yeah.
Or get thrown out. Mori Wada comments, just a little more information about the Nintendo NX. Apparently trying to drum up some almost Wii-like rhetoric back when it was called the Revolution. Says it's going to surprise and innovate. It's a marked change in tone from the announcement, which was almost another please understand moment when he mentioned it during the whole mobile press conference. Now he's actively stoking the hype train, but it kind of, I don't know, there's something about it that reeks of executive meddling, of board meddling, that kind of the mentality of maybe now that we know that the NX is coming, they've got to sell the hell out of it from now until, you know, until they release it. And heaven help us if they have to, if the, they feel a need to fast track the system itself.
Yeah,
it's, you know, whenever I see this, it's like, I think it might be a little bit too soon to start hyping the NX. You've got a lot of good stuff coming out for the Wii U, and you're probably just going to end up Osborning it if you start hyping what's coming next.
And just for emphasis, this is what Sega did wrong in the 1990s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not going to get on the doom and gloom train, say Nintendo's going to be in big trouble, but that would be a mistake. And
Sega didn't have really any other options at that time, and Nintendo at this point still does.
Originally, Iwata said that there will be no new news about the NX until 2016. So I'm hoping from now they just shut up about it until E3 next year.
Yeah.
So
that would be in their best interests, I would think.
Yeah. Well, this is a system that I would say it's very unlikely that this will be ready anytime before holiday 2017.
That's what I said.
Granted, there was some Revolution buzz for the Wii this far out in its situation, but, you know, we'll see if they play it right.
Yeah. I mean, I would be surprised if the Wii, let's just hope they don't call it Wii something.
Oh, God.
Yeah, can we drop the Wii name, please?
My perspective of it, for the Wii U, they should have brought back the NES branding.
Yeah.
That would have been perfect for that system.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they call the NX the NXS.
That would be awesome.
Never know. because I think at this point the Wii brand is kind of tainted. They probably ought to get away from it.
Well, they've beaten it into the ground.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we are a year away from the Wii brand being a decade old.
Yeah.
Yep.
And kind of being associated with either mass market pandering or
kitty games,
abject misrepresentation. So they need to get as far away from that name as possible. Yes, it did make them a lot of money, but it's not going to do it anymore.
No.
Nope.
So we'll wait and see what they do. I'd be surprised if they didn't at least put some sort of mention about the NX at this year's E3. But even though they said they wouldn't, they'll probably still mention it.
Yeah. Well, there's a difference between a mention and news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Iwata said there would be no news until 2016. So.
Yeah.
A lot of wiggle room in there.
Yeah. Next story.
Yeah. So amidst certain elements in the fandom asking questions about Link's gender, an indie game jam is focusing on Zelda titles explicitly starring a female version of Link. This is this is kind of what I like to see. Sometimes you'll just have people kind of complaining about how a character's represented or representational possibilities in games. These people are actually sitting down and doing something about it, and that's kind of the drum I've always been beating is, you know, the barrier for entry in game development has never been lower. So, if you find fault with something in, you know, in games, you know, sit down and fix it. You can get RPG yeah. Maker XP for $25. Mm-hmm. Unity is free to work with until you actually want to release something.
Yeah.
The tools are out there. So, I fully support this and really look forward to seeing what they come up with. I'm just a little concerned if Nintendo doesn't have a history of keeping their hands off of stuff like this.
Nope.
And so we might see just a deluge of cease and desist orders thrown at whatever projects come out of this. You know, hopefully that's not the case, but
it's very
history is very telling.
Yeah. Well, at the same time, I mean, there have been a lot of Legend of Zelda, you know, ROM hacks and all those things, and Nintendo have pretty much, you know, kept their hands off of those. So, you never know.
The question is, if they're going to have a female Link, what's Zelda's involvement going to be?
Well, I would.
It doesn't have to be any different.
No,
that would be perfectly cool.
Yeah.
Well, I would turn that on its head by saying, "Yeah, I haven't gone through and checked personally because time has been kind of at a premium for me of late. But this is something I'm definitely interested in finding out. There have to be games in the Legend of Zelda series, the earlier years in particular." That never even quantified Link's gender.
Right. We didn't really know who Link's gender was, at least until, like, Link to the Past, I don't
you
think.
Can look. I'll say this. You can look at instruction manuals and probably find something pertaining to it because, as a matter of necessity for just explaining all sorts of things about the game. But if you look at the content of the games themselves, I would be almost certain... you know, the first two games in particular, maybe A Link to the Past, maybe Oracles.
Well, we definitely knew by 89 because they had the cartoon.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Do we really want to admit that incarnation of Link as, you know.
Existing.
Yeah, we all have our little secrets.
Well, don't forget in Zelda 2 you had the healing woman.
Hmm.
So basically they came up with the idea of restoring your health with sex with a prostitute before GTA did that. So
always innovative.
Yep.
Sometimes unintentionally.
I certainly do not believe that was unintentional.
No.
I am absolutely certain that that was completely intentional on Nintendo's part.
You never know with Miyamoto.
Yeah.
That dude has a weird sense of humor.
Yeah.
But the other thing to consider is that this is a series that spans multiple incarnations of the same character. It's not the same person from game to game.
Yeah.
So that's why I said how many games don't necessarily make any mention. That would be something interesting to find out, and I'm sure there are people out there who would do the research if they haven't already. But
but, that's, you know, the idea of, you know, it being a female Link, but, you know, still going after Princess Zelda, I mean, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Yeah.
Well, even the nature of that relationship is left pretty ambiguous a lot of the time.
Well, not with Skyward Sword, it definitely wasn't.
Well, Skyward Sword, but a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But, what was I going to say? Damn it. But yeah, that would, it would be interesting to find that out. Just how many games, don't say anything for certain about that. And, maybe it's been the player's own assumptions that, you know,
yeah. Either way, I want to see these Zelda games.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll get posted at some point.
And the only guidelines are that it does have to explicitly star a female version of Link, and that it has to take place in the Zelda universe. So
yeah,
that's a pretty broad scope.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot you can do with just those being the guidelines.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, there should be some pretty good output from this. Again, you know, if Nintendo doesn't slam the door.
Yeah.
And, you know, Skyward Sword really expanded the whole Zelda universe mythos quite a bit.
Well, yeah, that was the game that kind of necessitated they write a whole book about it.
Yeah. I mean, just think about it. At one point in the Zelda universe, they had robots.
Yeah.
You know? Robots, advanced mining machinery. So, I mean, there's a lot you can work with.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you one thing. After I read Hyrule Historia, I have not been able to look at the first two games with the same eyes again.
Nope. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Once you realize that that those two games are actually playing themselves out in basically the ruins of a dying Hyrule.
Yep.
With a future that has yet to be defined in any way whatsoever.
Yeah.
Makes it a lot darker.
I really want to see Nintendo make a game in that setting.
Yeah.
Like Hyrule after Hyrule.
Yeah.
And the real question, it's still up in the air, you know, what was it that happened in the past that made it degrade to such a medieval state?
Yeah.
And here's what I love about it. That timeline includes some of the most meaningful games in the series. And some of the most influential games in the series.
It's not just one timeline either.
There.
Don't forget, it's not just one timeline either. There's actually two.
Yeah. No, there's three.
Yeah, three.
There's the Ocarina of Time is the point where it all splits off, and then there was the Hero of Time Succeeds Adult Route. The Hero of Time Succeeds Child Route, and then the Hero of Time Fails.
Yeah.
A Link to the Past, Link's Awakening, The Legend of Zelda, and The Adventure of Link all assume that Link failed in Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
There's some food for thought right there.
Yeah.
Means Ganon actually succeeded and ruled the world for a little while.
Yeah. He wasn't killed. That's why he was sealed away by the sages.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see that. Let's see some post-Adventure of Link content. That would completely revitalize my interest in the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instantly.
You could bring some serious drama into the Zelda formula.
Yeah.
And Zelda is not exactly a series that's known for having a very detailed plot.
It can be when it's at its best.
Yeah.
But that was a bit of a tangent, but that's my whole investment in the Zelda fandom right now. I want to see what comes after the Adventure of Link.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see where Hyrule goes after Hyrule.
Yeah.
Because just because there's no more Kingdom of Hyrule doesn't mean that the whole 100-year cycle is going to stop.
Yeah.
Nope.
There are a lot of things you could do with that.
I mean, you know, the little clip that they showed for the sort of the little cutscene for Legend of Zelda Wii U, I mean, that one, the arrow that Link was using implied that he was using some sort of, at that point, unbeknownst technology, so...
Yeah. And I noticed that there that there's just a whole lot of wilderness in what they've shown us so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, granted, that's pretty much most Zelda games anyway. It's just a whole lot of wilderness. But
you'll see stuff off in the distance, usually the castle or villages or, you know, something that implies civilization.
Mm-hmm.
This was just a massive expanse of wilderness with no discernible human structure in sight. I'm not honestly making too much of that. I'm really hoping. I would love to see that be that game.
Yeah,
because I'm already excited for The Legend of Zelda Wii U, and that's going to be a segue into our next news item, unfortunately. But I'm already really excited for it. But if they said that it was on the Hero of Time Fails timeline and comes after The Adventure of Link, I would go to GameStop and put my $50, $60 down right now. $100 for the collector's edition, fine. Fuck it. Here's my money. That would completely that would completely renew my interest in the series.
Well, the indie game Girl Zelda idea, what would get me to be on board with Kickstarter like mad, hopefully, you know, if Nintendo doesn't shut them down immediately, I would love for Zelda to turn into a girl when she gets doused with cold water. Back into a guy with hot water. Come on. How could you not want that?
All right, I'm in.
Yeah.
It would just turn into a really weird anime, but, you know.
Find out how many people can send in cease and desist orders.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Viz would be right up there with them.
I don't think this is ever going to see the light of Kickstarter, but this is just an indie game jam that I imagine everything that comes out of it will be free to download and play if it is permitted to exist.
Yeah.
Hopefully Nintendo keeps their hands off of it because this is genuinely interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But history just doesn't.
Yeah, but this would be a PR minefield for Nintendo to get involved in, though. It may be playing with their IP, but it changes enough.
It's a different context. Yeah.
And you don't want to be the company that goes, actually.
Especially
our,
right now.
Yeah. So, you know, I think just for that reason alone, they might stay away from it.
They would have to have one hell of a fall guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But onto the Wii U Zelda, we're not going to be playing that this year.
Yeah, or maybe even at 2016. They're not committing to that either.
Yeah,
not going to be at E3. Eiji Aonuma released a video, which was basically his version of a Please Understand video. basically admitted that the Muse just bludgeoned him and his team during the development of this game. It makes you really hopeful for what the final product's going to be, but damn. That was one of the games I was really hoping to get my hands on toward the end of the year, and you know, it's a critical loss for their E3, which was probably going to be built around Zelda. But I guess that's going to be left to Star Fox now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this year it's going to be, looks like Splatoon and Star Fox are going to have to carry the Wii U, unless
and I'm sure they can do it.
Yeah. Unless there's something else really big that we don't know about yet.
Yeah, I kind of cringed when they said that they wanted Splatoon to do for action shooters what Mario Kart did for racing, but that's just my whole thing right there. And you have to ask, with the Nintendo NX waiting in the wings, could the Wii U's lifespan be extended by Zelda's delay?
Just by necessity, it would have to be.
Yeah.
And I'm sure this, at the very least, guarantees that the Legend of Zelda Wii U will be the final game for that system.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, Xenoblade Chronicles X also comes out, so...
That's going to be a lot sooner, though.
Yeah.
But that will be... I mean, especially now, as a matter of necessity, it will have to be a major part of Nintendo's presentation at E3. Mm. They can still cobble together a great 2015 for the Wii U. It doesn't have to all be about the 3DS. And then, there's still Shin Megami Tensei Cross Fire Emblem, which they're insisting still is a thing. They're still insistent that it exists, but...
I'm not dead yet.
Yeah. But considering it was a part of the original, please understand. I don't know. I really want to see it because I love Shin Megami Tensei and I love Fire Emblem. So, if that just randomly happened to show up on a release chart slated for this holiday season, I would have no complaints whatsoever.
Yeah. I'm hoping that they take this delay and actually, you know, use it for the right reasons.
Yeah, it sounds like Aonuma was left with more ideas than he knows what to do with. And now he's got to sit down and just piece those all together into a game, which he can absolutely do. Yeah. I'm not doubting that in the slightest. But, wow, the timetable on it.
Yeah. I mean, if you want a big Zelda game like this, where exploration is the key, you really want stuff to discover. I mean, you don't just want to walk around a barren wasteland and not have anything going on.
Yeah.
Got to have something for players to do.
It makes you wonder what he stumbled upon that completely blew him away like that. I guess we'll find out.
Probably Skyrim.
I hope not.
Yeah. Can take that, philosophy of openness and just run with it, but you don't have to completely change the game.
Yeah. And we'll see what he comes up with.
No, he's done a pretty good job with the Zelda games of the past few years, so I don't... I'm not...
Skyward Sword was definitely the best of the 3D Zeldas, and of course we've got Link Between Worlds, which was just amazing the whole way through.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I just want to get my hands on this game. I want to play it.
Yeah. It kind of sucks it won't happen this year, but I think in the end it'll probably be worth it.
Certainly not unprecedented.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we just have to accept the fact that every Zelda game announcement is going to come with at least one built-in delay.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I thought it was kind of ballsy of them at the Game Awards to even straight out say, "Yeah, you're going to be playing Legend of Zelda by the end of the year," and I wanted to believe them.
Yeah. Well, he said the end of the year. He didn't specify which year.
Yeah. I think he did, actually. You know, the only problem now is that gives them an out on Star Fox, because the only thing they promised is that you'll be playing Star Fox before you play Zelda.
Yeah. Oh, crap, that's right.
Uh-oh.
So, stay tuned.
Yeah, but if all of Nintendo's major titles drop off this year, that's not going to be very good for the Wii U this holiday.
Right. Well, I was going to say, they still got the 3DS, and that makes them invincible, but, the Wii U is a properly good console, and hopefully it can cobble together at least one really, really amazing year during its lifespan to kind of kind of sum it all up.
Yeah.
So the question of the week this week, going back to the indie game jam topic, and I mentioned that I like seeing people take up development in order to fix whatever they find wrong with gaming instead of just complaining to developers to, I guess, fix it for them.
Yeah.
So the question of the week this week, do developers have an innate responsibility? And this is, I'm broadening this considerably because this is a broad topic, but do developers have an innate responsibility to be socially topical and expand things like inclusiveness, representation in games, or with development enjoying a lower barrier for entry than ever, is the onus now on those invested in those issues? And here's the thing when answering the question of the week, and why. So I want to see some good discussion on this because it is one of the big gaming subjects of the moment, and I'm really interested in hearing what people have to say about it.
Well, me personally, the idea of, you know, do developers have an innate responsibility? I don't necessarily say they have a responsibility, but I would say that if they're going to go around, you know, get involved in some sensitive topics, they need to be able to keep their facts straight.
Yeah.
You know, treat the topic with respect. Good example, Call of Juarez, the Cartel. Mm. If you don't remember that game, well, count yourself lucky.
Okay.
That game was supposed to be about the whole thing with the drug cartels in Mexico. Yeah. And it got so many facts screwed up that it actually was insulting. Like, I mean, basic stuff. The guys at Extra Credits actually did a whole episode about it, and they can explain it far better than I can.
Hmm.
But the point being, if you're going to get involved in some sort of sensitive topic, you need to be tread lightly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just for me,
yeah, like, do the research.
Yeah. Just for me, I don't think that the developers have an innate responsibility to do this because
Right. It's
not every single game needs to touch on these issues. Yeah. I mean, I've never once during the history of playing Tetris wondered if that T was a man or a woman.
Yes,
you know, there's some games that it just does not apply. But
I do think that some. Sometimes the topic does wander into that territory.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where what started forming my my own opinion of it, because and having ventured into development myself, I just think that creative freedom is one of those things that, you know, you just don't touch that.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody wants to wander into certain territory or cover this topic or something like that in a game, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to see a game industry or a gaming media where every game is scrutinized. Like, is this studio doing enough to promote this issue or something like, because that just doesn't take us down a good road at all.
No.
Yeah, you don't want to end up running your media like they ended up doing, like in the Soviet Union, where everything has to conform to the
right
party line.
Yeah,
that is not a good road to follow.
Yeah.
No, I don't think that they should be. It shouldn't be a requirement at all whatsoever. Or the creative factor, like you guys said, it's not always relevant. It's not in the scope of what the game is about. But when they do tread into those waters, they
do it right.
Yeah, they should do it right, and they should do it. This is my opinion, of course, but I think they should do it with forward thinking, not backward thinking.
Yeah.
Because that's really, I think that is the overall voice of gaming.
And the thing is, gaming really can effectively go into some really dark territory if it's given the chance.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, do you remember that game that was supposed to come out, Imagination is the Only Escape?
Nope.
It was sort of a fantasy about this kid who was during the Holocaust. And the way the developer made it out, it was going to be done very mature. And actually, Nintendo was going to pick it up, and then they ended up dropping it at the last minute. Oh, and then
they
there
saw
was
something they didn't like.
Well, there was that. And don't forget, I think it was, what was it, 5 days in Fallujah?
Really? Okay, just the title. I wouldn't want to.
Yeah,
it was actually made by a bunch of guys who were actually in the war, who actually fought at the Battle of Fallujah. So the point, you know, they were trying to, and the thing was, they were trying to sort of make a game where they could give a good idea of the experience of what it was like to fight in that particular war. It was 6 days in Fallujah, not 5 days.
Yeah.
But it was Fallujah during that whole war was like one of the most, probably the most grueling and violent in the whole war.
Yeah.
Which technically is still going on, but that one ended up getting canceled because obviously Fox News got a hold of it and.
Of course.
Yeah.
Enough said there.
Yeah.
Whenever you need something fucked up, they're your team.
Yeah, I just want to add a little bit to this though, and say that if you're gonna tread into this territory, and you're going to, you know, put out a message, or how am I going to say this? Be subtle about it.
Yeah.
If you smack people over the head with it, it just feels like you're pushing an agenda rather than trying to, you know, actually advance things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought this War of Mine did that pretty effectively.
Yeah.
You know, it was a lot of suggestion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, until the actual game came out, and then you could experience it for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, thought-provoking is wonderful, but sledgehammers are tedious.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It'll drive away customers.
Yeah. It seems like we actually all agree on this topic.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah. So, I guess, I'm just going to call it a show now. Yeah. All right. Well, with that, I am Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
Update complete.